Okay, well, I appreciate the invitation to participate in this conference and really thank Dee and everyone here in Virginia for putting the effort in to host this event. Having done two of them in Missouri, I know it's no small undertaking. What I want to do this morning is more or less share some ideas relative to the background behind where we're currently at with synchronization protocols in beef heifers, and suffice to say, I think we've made some significant progress over the last roughly 10 to 15 years in moving away from systems that require heat detection to opportunities now that really facilitate fixed-time AI or appointment breeding. I want to go back and revisit a couple of the things that Mike Smith talked to you about relative to heifer management, because I think, in my opinion, they're very critical in terms of not only ensuring success one year, but hopefully furthering opportunities to see that producers actually continue utilizing synchronization and AI in subsequent years. He mentioned in his presentation, I think these are very critical points, that what we know from large data sets gathered over the past 30 to 40 years, that heifers that conceive earlier during their first breeding season typically stay in the herd longer and they produce more pounds of beef over their productive lifetimes. And I think you'll probably hear that point reiterated over the next couple of days relative to heifer programs in general. These five points, I think, are very critical in terms of heifer development programs, regardless of whether you're in Virginia, the Midwest, or the West Coast. Target weight and nutritional development are critical. The point that probably is missing there, but I think it's assumed, is that the health platform that sets those heifers up in terms of long-term reproductive success is highly important. But I think there's a couple of things relative to pre-breeding evaluation of heifers that are extremely valuable in terms of assessing either how good a job has been done relative to getting those heifers ready to go into the first breeding season, or perhaps in some cases how that development program has perhaps failed. And I'm going to talk more about that in terms of track scores. And then obviously what we do is evaluate skeletal development measured or evaluated through pelvic measurements. The final points relate primarily to synchronization and use of the genetic information to minimize both the incidence and severity of calving difficulty. So relative to the pre-breeding evaluation, what we try and recommend is that the heifers, that we do get a weight on those heifers, going back to what Mike talked about relative to that target weight, consider where the heifers are at in terms of reproductive development and then also skeletal development. This is sort of a snapshot in terms of the track scores and what's involved with them. It may look complicated, but after you do a number of these, it really isn't. But basically, it evaluates reproductive development of the track. And essentially, the scores range from 1 to 5, with 1 being an infantile track, 2s and 3s being non-cycling, and 4s and 5s being cycling. The relative differences between a 2 and a 3 is what we consider to be track score heifer as being a 2. That heifer, in our opinion, is probably greater than 30 days away from reaching cyclicity or puberty. A track score of 3 is, in many cases, within about a month of cyclicity. A score of 4 indicates that the heifer is cycling. She's in the follicular phase of her cycle. And a track score of 5 means that that heifer is in the luteal phase of her cycle, roughly between days 6 and 16. She does have a seal that's palpable. Mike Day developed this cartoon in terms of the complicated series of endocrine events that lead up to puberty onset in heifers. And suffice to say, it is a fairly complicated sequence of events. But the point that I want to make relative to it is essentially we can actually evaluate what's going on in terms of those events by assigning a track score from 1 to 5. And I think based on the numbers that we've done over the years, I have a lot of confidence in the fact that this really is a useful tool to incorporate into a development program. As Willie said, I served on the faculty at the University of Kentucky for about 8 years before I moved to Mizzou, and we began a heifer program there. And actually, I was a bit skeptical of the whole track scoring system. And we began a program there in collaboration with a group of veterinarians in central Kentucky that really wanted to try and test this in the field. And so this is the first data set that we actually collected, and we looked at not only the weights of these heifers based on track score, the pelvic dimensions of those heifers, but then all these heifers went on, at that time, an MGA-based protocol. And the thing that was really impressive to me that stuck out was how those track scores correlated, as you can see here, to the estrus response during that synchronized period. And as I said, all those heifers were on an MGA-based protocol. The point that I want to really quickly touch on that Mike mentioned is that one of the things that we learned pretty quickly in that program, because we were working with backgrounders that were purchasing heifers to develop, that they didn't really understand or know the backgrounds of those heifers from a management standpoint. And a number of those heifers, as it turned out, had actually been implanted during the suckling period. Skip Bartol and his group at Auburn did a really nice study looking at the use of Synovex C implants, in which case heifers were implanted at birth, day 21 to day 45, and then compared to control heifers. And all these heifers were allowed to reach puberty, and then they were slaughtered on the same day of the estrus cycle. If you look through these weights and measurements, essentially what you can see is that there's a palpable difference based on uterine glandular development in these heifers. And those effects in terms of detrimental effects on the reproductive tract are more or less irreversible. So if you are purchasing heifers in the next few years, we're going to see significant numbers of heifers, I think, retained, purchased heifers that will be brought in to breed. But if you are in that situation where you're purchasing heifers, that'd be one of the first questions I'd ask, is have these heifers been implanted? So as Mike said, the track score should be done 4 to 6 weeks before breeding or 2 weeks before synchronization. I'll talk a little bit about that as we go through this. And we use a rule of thumb based on the data that we've collected over the years that we'd like to see about 50% of those heifers track scoring 4 and 5, which more or less gives us the green light to indicate that they're ready to put on a treatment. So why use synchronization? First point, obviously, more heifers will become pregnant early. And I'm a big advocate of the progestin-based systems, either MGA or Cedar, because as he indicated in his talk, you get more or less more bang for your buck relative to the induction potential on those non-cycling heifers. So it's a really important consideration when you're identifying protocols to use in a heifer program. The other point is, and this is data that we collected early on in the Show Me Select program in Missouri, but we compared based on our data we collect and more or less warehouse in our database. We looked at pregnancy rates of heifers in natural service versus synchronized and AI'd herds. And you can see here, based on track score, the numbers of heifers that were exposed for natural service represented by the NS and the synchronized and AI'd heifers. And these heifers at this time were all placed on an MGA-based program, but there's 1,000 heifers in the natural service group, over 10,000 in the synchronized and AI group. But we looked at 21-day pregnancy rates on these heifers. And essentially what you see here is there's a significant improvement in pregnancy rates within the first 21 days. So going back to what Mike talked about, synchronization is not only important in terms of a management tool to facilitate genetic improvement, but from a reproductive management standpoint, it's an extremely valuable tool. So let's talk about MGA-based protocols. And over the years, I think Ken Odie's group at Colorado State, Gene Deitcher, and then the work that Cliff Lamb did relative to first establishing the long-term or 14-day MGA-based protocol and then reconsidering it in terms of the length of that interval between MGA withdrawal and prostaglandin, I think was really a valuable work that contributed to a better understanding of how to manipulate the estrus cycle and really was more or less the gold star relative to protocols at that time that were available to facilitate use of synchronization in heifers. Many producers, in a lot of cases over the years that we've worked with, have not been ready to go into an AI program or embark on one but still wanted to take advantage of a synchronization program. And so this is a very simplified approach if you want to use synchronization in conjunction with natural service using MGA. Basically, essentially, all you do is bypass that first subfertile estrus that occurs after MGA withdrawal. And in the work that we've done, we've actually exposed heifers to groups of bulls as early as 10 days after MGA withdrawal. And if you look at the results on this slide, this is actually data that I collected when I was at the University of Kentucky. But essentially, you can see here there's very good results in using that system either in conjunction with a natural service program or in combination with an artificial insemination program. If you use MGA in order to facilitate an AI program, obviously you want to follow with prostaglandin as indicated on that first schematic. But what you see here is that you group the heats over a period of 3 to 5 days. With the MGA and Natural Service, essentially, the heats are spread out over 7 to 10 days, roughly, and so that's advantageous in many cases for from the standpoint of the bull. Real quickly, I want to talk a little bit, because I think we're going to again move into a series of years or a time period where more heifers are going to be pulled from backgrounding lots and exposed for breeding. But we had some interest a number of years ago looking at what effect long-term MGA feeding had on fertility in heifers. And so essentially that's what we did. We fed heifers MGA for a period of 87 days, compared that to heifers that were on the standard 14, at that time, 17-day program. And then for the 87-day heifers, we essentially did the same thing. 17 days later, those heifers were administered an initial injection of prostaglandin. Any heifers that failed to respond were re-injected 11 days later. This is what the heat response looked like. These were with registered Angus heifers at the University of Kentucky Research Farm at Coldstream. But you can see the responses after the first injection. The red bars represent the short-term treated heifers. The gray bars, the long-term. Big difference in terms of the numeric difference in terms of the response after the first injection, but when we came back and re-injected both groups that failed to respond 11 days later, our total response did not differ. We ultrasounded these heifers, and this is where we saw some differences. Essentially, on the short-term heifers, we saw no abnormalities relative to luteinized follicular cysts. On the long-term treated heifers, 63% of those heifers had no issues, but roughly 40% of those heifers had luteinized follicular cysts. The other point relative to this, if you look at those images, this is more or less a normal-appearing CL. It's fluid, has a fluid-filled cavity. This is one of the heifers that was cystic. In this case, you can see it's a 42-millimeter cyst. The other point relative to this is some of these heifers will actually begin lactating. So if you're feeding heifers for long periods of time in a backgrounding lot and then deciding to pull the plug on them and breed them, these are some considerations that you need to be made aware of. In terms of conception rate, we didn't really see any differences in terms of fertility on these heifers, and pregnancy rate at the end of the breeding season, no differences either. But I think those other points that I brought your attention to, I think, are worth considering. So how do MGA and cedar-based protocols compare in heifers? This is some work that Daniel Mallory in my lab worked on, and essentially what we did was we compared the MGA program, the 14-19-day system, to a 14-day cedar, in this case administering prostaglandin 16 days later. If you've used either of these systems, this you may already be aware of this, but you see dramatic differences in terms of heat response coming off MGA in comparison to what you see coming off a 14-day cedar. You see a much more robust expression of heat over a much shorter period of time after cedar withdrawal as compared to withdrawal of MGA. And basically, in a lot of respects, it's more or less how both of those products clear the animal in terms of physiological clearance. We look at, in terms of the work that we've done over the years, we place a high emphasis on looking at the variance to interval to estrus, because when it comes right down to it, if we're trying to time breed cattle, we want to know how tight that synchrony is. And the best statistical tool that we have to do that is variance for interval to estrus. And initially, if you look at the heat response coming off either of the two progestins, basically, the bigger the number here, this is not any unit of measure. It's more or less an indication of that interval to estrus and that degree of synchrony. But you can see, in this case, the much smaller number is an indicator of tighter synchrony and much more robust response. And so you can see the dramatic differences there that are reflected in that graph on the previous slide. When we look at the overall estrus response, this work was done at the Circle A operation, an Angus operation up at their heifer development facility at Lineville, Iowa. We had very good heat response on these heifers. 85% of the MGA-treated heifers responded versus 92% of the 14-day cedar-treated heifers. If we look at the cycling, the estrus response differences between groups, you can see that there was a significant difference in terms of cycling versus prepuberal heifers that were assigned to the cedar protocol. But there was no difference in terms of the heat response among the cedar-treated heifers. Again, this is the distribution of estrus after prostaglandin, and if you look at that from in statistical terms, basically, again, what you see is a reduced variance for interval to estrus, in other words, improved synchrony on the cedar-treated heifers compared to the MGA-treated heifers. At the end of the day, the conclusion from that study was is that estrus response and synchrony of estrus was significantly improved among heifers assigned to the 14-day CEDAR protocol. And essentially, if you looked at the pregnancy data, there was no difference. And I think one of the things that you're going to be seeing here shortly is Rick Funston has some data that's coming out in press that basically supports this. So the synchrony may be improved, but I think both MGA and CEDAR work very effectively in both heat detection systems as well as timed AI programs. That leads us then to the work that Cliff led in the multi-state CEDAR trial, and essentially what this was a really kind of a pivotal study in terms of getting us started and considering use of synchronization to facilitate timed AI with a short-term protocol. And essentially, these were the four protocols that were compared. A seven-day CEDAR without, as you can see here, GnRH at CEDAR insertion. And then in this case, the two treatments were more or less a hybrid system where the heifers were heat detected up to 84 hours. Anything that had not responded that time was inseminated by appointment, and GnRH was administered at AI. And then they were compared to two timed AI groups, the only difference being that GnRH was administered in one treatment at CEDAR insertion versus not in the other. And in both cases, the heifers were inseminated at 60 hours after CEDAR removal and prostaglandin. These are the pregnancy rates. As you can see, very similar in terms of the timed AI results, or the pregnancy rates resulting from those four various treatments, 55%, 57% for the two treatments that involved a combination of heat detection and AI, and 49% versus 53% on the straight timed AI groups. So the conclusions from that study basically pointed to the fact that GnRH at CEDAR insertion did not improve pregnancy rates after timed AI. GnRH at CEDAR insertion did not alter the percentage of heifers detected in estrus. But I think this final point is important, that a combination of detecting estrus and AI before cleanup actually enhanced pregnancy rates over timed AI. So the next question was, how do long and short-term CEDAR-based protocols compare in heifers? And this is work that Dan Bush did in my program. And essentially what we wanted to do was to compare the 7-day CEDAR, co-sync CEDAR protocol with the, at that time we were working with a more involved long-term CEDAR protocol, the CEDAR Select protocol, where GnRH was administered 9 days after CEDAR removal and 7 days before prostaglandin. And as you can see here, the timing relative to appointment breeding differed 54 hours for the 7-day or short-term group versus 72 hours for the long-term. If we look at the results here, basically what you can see is that the pregnancy rates by appointment breeding for these two groups did differ significantly with the advantage to the long-term treated heifers. And essentially within treatment, you can see there was essentially no difference between the cycling or prepubertal heifers prior to the time heifer or treatments were actually initiated. And so from that, I think one of the things that we saw was that in this particular case, we do see some unpredictability relative to GnRH administration at CEDAR insertion on the short-term treated heifers. We did see a trend toward a higher estrus response on the longer-term treated heifers up to the point of timed insemination. Again, there was a reduced variance associated with the interval from prostaglandin to estrus and ovulation. We saw a significant bump in terms of pregnancy rates resulting from timed AI. And then what Dan actually did in this trial was we looked at repeat heats on these heifers. So we followed those heifers to see what the returns look like, and all this was aided with the use of HeatWatch. And we actually saw a reduced variance in the interval to estrus from the time of fixed AI to their subsequent return on the longer-term treated heifers. So how do the CEDAR Select and 14-day protocols compare? Essentially, what we wanted to do here was to look at both response, that interval to and synchrony of estrus, and then pregnancy rates. And Nicole Lightman in my program actually led this study. And again, this was conducted at Circle A. And we really had the luxury at Circle A of getting very precise information because we were able to put 400 to 500 heifers at a time on HeatWatch, which gives us very precise heat data, not only in terms of timing of heats, number of heats, but also the duration of the heats. So essentially, this is what we did. We compared the CEDAR Select to the 14-day CEDAR, and this is what the heat profile looked on those heifers relative to the heat distribution patterns. The red bars representing the CEDAR Select heifers that got GnRH between CEDAR removal and prostaglandin, the gold bars representing the straight cedar PG treated heifers. To not go into a lot of depth relative to those results other than to summarize them, if we look at Esther's response, it was similar between the treatments. That's one of the things that we've been impressed by, and this is all heat watch data. But essentially, from what we consider the synchronized period to be would be 144 hours. In other words, when we inject prostaglandin to the last heat that we would anticipate being expressed as a result of that injection would be 144-hour time period. But you can see on the 14-day cedar-treated heifers, it was a 98% response versus 94% on cedar select. The mean interval to estrus was 7 hours earlier for the heifers that did not receive GnRH, and heifers assigned to the 14-day cedar PG protocol had a greater synchrony of estrus compared to the heifers that received GnRH between cedar removal and prostaglandin. If we look at the AI conception rates, we saw a significant improvement, and these heifers were bred, as I indicated, by heat among the heifers that were on the 14-day cedar versus the cedar select. In terms of the AI pregnancy rate, also differences. In terms of final pregnancy rates at the end of the breeding season, no differences. So the administration of GnRH following the cedar removal from that study basically told us that we really didn't need it. And so that led to the next study where we looked at the two protocols on the basis of timed AI or appointment breeding. As I pointed out, one of the results we saw from that study with the aid of HeatWatch was the fact that there was a pretty significant difference in the interval to estrus based on the two treatments. And so we stuck with that information to time breed the heifers. So the cedar select treated heifers were appointment bred at 72 hours. The 14-day cedar PG treated heifers were inseminated at 66 hours. And this is a summary of three data sets, over 400 heifers that were all on heat watch, different breeding seasons at that same location. Heifers from the various ranches at Circle A, there's three ranches in Missouri. They have about 8,000 cows, and those heifers each, they have dual breeding seasons, so those heifers were moved to that developing facility. And so it provided a great resource for us. But the impressive thing to us was the fact that if you could more or less lay these data sets one over the other in terms of timing timing of heat in relationship to prostaglandin and when those peaks occurred. This is work that Daniel Mallory again led, but essentially what you can see here is that the initial data indicated that there was a significant improvement in pregnancy rates by resulting from appointment breeding among the heifers that were on the 14-day cedar protocol. And if you look at these differences relative to the estrus cycling and prepubertal heifers, you can see some differences there as well. So in summary, pregnancy rates tended to be higher for the 14-day cedar PG treated heifers compared to cedar select. Final pregnancy rates did not differ. And we continued to collect data on that in using that protocol and have continued to see good success with it. So I wanted to throw in a few slides now because the program that we have in Missouri, the Show Me Select program, affords us an opportunity to look retrospectively with relatively large numbers of heifers and how they're performing in the field on these protocols. So one of the things that we are comfortable with in the program in Missouri is that we can look at data in this regard because of the consistency in the information in terms of the data that we track. So all heifers in our program go through a reproductive exam prior to the breeding season. If they are going into an AI program or a timed AI program, they cannot be exposed to bulls until 14 days after AI. And all the pregnancy diagnosis has to be performed within 90 days of the breeding season. So we have very uniform data collection and reporting. So to begin with, if we look at the data shown on this slide, Jordan Thomas in my program summarized this from our heifer database. There's over 8,000 heifers. This is data from 2010 to 2012 in terms of heifers that were time bred in the heifer program. And as you can see here, there's 8,300 heifers in this data set. But the thing that's impressive is if you go back to that heat detection data that I showed you relative to track scoring, we now have support for the fact that if you're going to time breed heifers, the track score information is also very valuable because, as you see here, you go from 5% of the ones conceiving to time AI to 33% of the twos, 48% of the threes, 51% of the fives, and 51% of the fours, and 57% of the fives. Now, I want to go through this on a protocol basis, and as you can see, the results or the data is somewhat lopsided, and I'll explain that in a moment. But we had over 7,000 heifers in this data set that were on the 14-day seeder. We had 400 that were on the 7-day co-sync seeder and 700, a little over 700 that were on MGA prostaglandin. But in each case, you can see here in the 7-day seeder, co-sync seeder, that trend holds true relative to the improvement you see relative to track score. The same holds true relative to MGA prostaglandin, and the same holds true relative to the 14-day seeder. Now, if we begin tearing this apart relative to a comparison of the protocols, the first thing I'd say is that we have very little data reported in our program on the track score 1 heifers. We have enough confidence now that most of those heifers never see the breeding season. Most of those heifers end up on a semi going to a feedlot in Kansas or Nebraska or Iowa. But if we break the data down based on cyclicity status and we look at it based on the twos and threes versus the fours and fives, and we look at the 7-day versus the MJ prostaglandin protocol versus the 14-day seeder, among heifers not cycling prior to synchronization, time to AI pregnancy rates were higher when using the 14-day protocol than when using the 7-day or the MGA program. And there was no difference between the 7-day and the MGA-treated heifers. This indirectly supports, in terms of the MGA versus the CEDAR program relative to the long term, I think some of the data that George Perry looked at in relationship to the potential for induction in short postpartum cows, that actually the CEDAR did a better job than MGA did. If we look now at the cycling heifers, among heifers cycling prior to synchronization, time to AI pregnancy rates were higher, again, when using the 14-day CEDAR than when using MGA prostaglandin. And this surprised us a little bit. But I think part of that relates to the fact that going back to that one slide that I showed you with the differences in terms of variance for interval to estrus, and the fact that you do see an improvement in synchrony. Rick has some interesting data that would challenge this, and I think this is one of the things over the next several years that I think will be of interest in terms of looking at this in more detail as all of us collect more data. Finally, if you look at the protocols in total, in terms of total pregnancy rates, you can see the total time to AI pregnancy rates were higher when using the 14-day protocol than the other two. And so the point being there is that there was no difference between a 7-day and between the 7-day system and MGA prostaglandin. The really critical thing, in my opinion, relative to this is when you have mixed populations of cycling and non-cycling heifers, you want to identify a protocol, and all these protocols work effectively. But if you do have a high percentage of heifers that are non-cycling, that can really create some problems for you in terms of outcomes if you don't make careful consideration of this track score information and then how to choose a protocol. The reason why we see so many heifers in Missouri on this protocol is more or less our veterinary community. And the reason for it is that they're actually getting involved at this point when those seeders are going in, doing the pre-breeding evaluations on those heifers, combining that with the pre-breeding booster vaccinations, and it's more or less turned it into a one-step management process. The other thing is economics are driving this, because in our heifer program, we started several years ago now what we call the Tier 2 concept. And so if we start looking at the economics of AI relative to Show Me Select, and the guys that have the booth out here in the foyer can attest to this. Whoops, what did I do? Basically, if we consider heifers that meet the minimum requirements for Show Me Select and add an AI pregnancy to it, this is data collected from 2010 to when we began distinguishing heifers as Tier 2s to present day. Basically, what we see is that adding an AI pregnancy to a heifer that meets the minimum requirements in our program adds $192. Tier 2s are heifers that are AI sired out of high accuracy sires. Okay, so those heifers are AI sired, but they're actually carrying, in the case where we actually add an AI pregnancy to that heifer, look what we're adding to the baseline when we consider a baseline heifer to be one that meets the minimum requirements but is carrying a natural service sire pregnancy. And I can tell you, we sold, Howard Early and some of the folks that are here from our program, sold Tier 2 heifers this last year for significantly over $2,000. Final point that I think all of us need to be aware of, and I throw this slide in for two considerations. We need to start paying attention to what our global competitors are doing in terms of utilizing reproductive technology that's developed here in the U.S. because you can darn well bet that there's a lot of other countries that are trying to position themselves to compete more effectively with us in terms of beef production and high-quality beef production. And this slide more or less attests to that fact. We were asked to get involved with the project and with the Angus heifers going to Russia here about a year ago and asked to advise them to a certain extent relative to synchronization programs. They chose to use the 14-day seeder protocol, and they sent me this email last fall. But basically, what they did was they sent me some initial data, but they completed the 14-day seeder program and insemination on 42,000 heifers over 24 days. Things went really well except for some binary issues. We stayed on schedule the entire time. We did not mix groups, which was also a huge concern with stockmen with little experience, and 140 groups of about 300 heifers to keep track of. They usually finished 30 minutes ahead of schedule. Placing heifers in 1,200 head groups during the seeder implantation period and dividing them into four groups of 300 at prostaglandin worked fine. We placed heat detection patches on eight different groups and consistently identified 82% to 88% of the heifers responding by 66 hours. They ultrasounded when they sent me this data, and then they followed up with a subsequent email, but they ultrasounded five farms when they sent me this of 15,000 heifers, and their pregnancy rates at the time they were running about 60%. So the point that I want to make relative to this is that the technology that's being used or developed here in many cases is being implemented very aggressively. And the other thing I need to consider is they're picking some pretty darn good genetics to start with in terms of their beginning point in implementing or adding to this relative to technology. So summary and conclusions, if we look at those protocol sheets and you look at the treatments broken down or the protocols broken down on the basis of heat detection, the kind of combination protocols, and then the straight appointment protocols, I think we're at a really neat time, because if we can appointment breed cattle with a success rate, or in many cases improved success rates over heat detection, we can really change cattle in a very quick way. Take-home points, I think one of the things that we're still supportive of is the fact that I think the long-term protocols enhance synchrony of estrus in both cycling and prepubertal heifers compared to maybe the short-term or MGA-based protocols. To me, it's all a question or point relative to that degree of synchrony. So I real quickly want to breeze through some acknowledgments. The faculty that I've had the privilege of working with at Mizzou are just great, all supporters in a very big way of the work that we've done, and big contributors as well. All the students that have worked in my program, we couldn't do a lot of the stuff that we do, but Roger Akins is here, and Roger's been one of the key people relative to facilitating field trials in that part of the state down in southeast Missouri, our MU farms and centers, and then support that we've received from USDA and the National Institute of Food and Agriculture. Support from industry, very generous support, and then finally a lot of the cooperatives that we worked with over the years. So with that, I'll close, and I think we'll have time later for questions perhaps. So thank you.